I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
Hi, I'm Christos Gate.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gate.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan.
And this is Victor Dandridge.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
We're on the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
All right, whenever you're ready, Tom.
I'm still looking at porn, hold on.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and with me as always are some of my best friends since I was a little kid. Joshua, how are you doing today?
I am doing great while trying to look up on the internet how to pronounce the name Choi.
All but right,
I'm pretty
well
sure
then.
It's Choi.
Could you spell it?
C-H-O-I, and the interweb says it's mostly Korean, and it's probably Choi.
It is probably Choi. Not sure
probably
why you're
Choi.
Looking that up. Maybe a hint of things to come. Tommy, also in Boston, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Tom. Tonight is we're recording a little later than usual. So tonight is sponsored by Lunesta. Lunesta, for when you need to get some sleep, like I always do.
Like you always do. And Mike, you're the reason we're going a little long tonight. How are you doing?
I am doing excellent tonight. Thank you very much, sir.
And why were you so late today?
I was out having a lovely Mexican dinner with Cherie from Florida. She's in town, so she invited me out to dinner, and I completely spaced on our podcast tonight.
Oh, how is Cherie? She is a well-known and fabulous kickboxer and all-around cool chick.
Yes, she is doing excellent. Her son, Nico, is really enjoying the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle series that I gave him for Christmas.
Well, you're a good foster uncle for that.
I miss talking to Cherie. Terrible ranger, great person.
Terrible ranger. The only ranger
terrible.
Ever to get lost inside of a pub.
I always think of the Last Crusade. She's a ranger who gets lost in her own museum, and most of the time she's just switching between longsword and longbow while she's lost.
Oh, my God. She would switch between those stupid weapons and miss every combat.
So many lost rounds of damage from switching weapons.
So many. So many. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, guys.
Absolutely not.
Today, we actually we have a request by one of our loyal listeners to talk about the Wild Cards series.
Nope.
Mike, do you want to tell them?
That's not it.
Wild Storm. Not Wild it. Cards is totally different.
Totally different.
Totally different. Now, Wild Storm. Mike, can you give us a little history on Wild Storm Comics?
Yeah.
Sure. Back in 1992, Image Comics was created, and Jim Lee and Brandon Choi started their own imprint called Wild Storm, where they had their superhero team-up group Wildcats. They later created Stormwatch, which was also a superhero team. And Gen 13, which was kind of a group of teen superheroes along the line of the Teen Titans and the X-Men, the early X-Men. Then in 1993, they actually formed the Wildstorm banner for Image Comics. And it was interesting because they started not only having their three comics being published under the name Wildstorm by Image, but they also started other titles and gave other creators a chance to publish under their banner, under Wildstorm, which was also under the Image banner. So in 1995, they started Homage Comics, and it had a lot of great series, like Kurt Busiek's Astro City, which is a whole pantheon of superheroes and supervillains, also drawn by Alex Ross. Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise, which was great. It started off as a comedy book about relationships and morphed into a tale of assassins. And then there was Sam Keith's The Max, which was about either a guy who was the protector of a planet or a homeless man having delusions. You're never really sure. And then James Robison's Leave It to Chance, which was about the 14-year-old daughter of a paranormal detective and her pet dragon. So they had a little bit for everybody. Then in 1997, they also got another title under the Wildstorm banner called Cliffhanger. If you liked Women with Big Boobs, this was your title to read. It had Scott Campbell's Danger Girl, which was an action spy boob adventure. In 1999, Wildstorm was acquired by DC Comics because they wanted Jim Lee to come over and take over as editor of DC Comics. So even though DC took him over, they continue to have their studio out in Los Angeles as opposed to this everybody going out to New York to work under DC. While there, they had such comics like The Authority and Planetary. And they even created an imprint called America's Best Comics to highlight Alan Moore's work. And you know, I know we're going to talk about a couple of the imprints under America's Best Comics, but one of them, which everybody probably will recognize, is The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is much better comic than it was a movie. Then in from 2001 to 2010, they had a number of other comics that were published by DC but under the Wildstorm print, including Ed Brubaker's excellent Sleeper, which was a superhero crime noir, and then Warren Ellis's Global Frequency, and Brian K. Vaughan's Ex Machina, which was a superhero slash political drama. Now, the reason we're talking about that is when the New 52 was created by DC Comics, they tried to sweep the Wildstorm universe into DC. So Apollo and Midnighter made it, Grifter made it, Voodoo made it, but it didn't really blend very well. When they did the rebirth, they're keeping some of the Wildstorm characters, but they just announced starting in February of 2017, Warren Ellis is going to be taking over the imprint of Wildstorm, so they're going to start publishing again, and that's very exciting because Warren Ellis's stuff, although it takes forever for it to get published, is really good.
Well, that was a very succinct and good background, a little bit on Wildstorm comic books. Now let's talk about some of our favorites. Tommy, I know like you have one of the best evers here. What is your favorite from Wildstorm?
I'm going with The Authority, or as it would be said in South Park, The Authority.
And you should respect The Authority.
You should definitely respect The Authority. The Authority, the one that I like is from 1999-2002, written by Warren Ellis. You can pick up collected editions on Amazon or at Comixology or probably in the DC site. It was a really great comic. The Authority was kind of an offshoot of Stormwatch. Some of the characters from Stormwatch were put into the Authority. Apollo and Midnighter were in the Authority. They were very socially progressive in it. They were a gay couple later on. They actually became married and adopted a child who was another Authority group member, Jenny Sparks, who was reverted to a child. They adopted her and were re-raising her, if you will. And this was just a great book. So it was kind of like a Justice League on steroids type of thing. The art was really good. And as Mike said, Warren Ellis was a great writer. And his work on that project was fantastic. And just my two cents on the Wildstorm brand, to my mind, it kind of fractured like a mirror. They went off into a million different splintered cells. A lot of them were pretty good when they kind of broke off from Image. And that's just kind of the way I view Wildstorm.
Wildstorm did fracture into a million different little pieces. And one of those pieces happens to be all of our favorite comic book. But Josh, you won the little contest to be the one to talk about it. What are you going to talk about, Josh?
So I'm going to talk about Top 10 because, well, for many reasons. I love Alan Moore's work. I love top 10 in general. But I'm actually going to roll back a little bit and give a little background. Mike was talking about America's Best Comics, and he was talking about what's called imprints. And for our readers who don't know what an imprint is, it's basically a sub-publisher of another publisher. So America's Best Comics was a subtitle owned by Wildstorm. And previously, America's Best Comic was actually a Golden Age imprint of another company. And after all the rights were basically released after many years, those characters basically become, public? They're like basically public domain. So they become public domain characters. So the American Best Comics from the Golden Age, some of those characters actually come into, since they took both the name of the imprint, and they actually imported some of those characters into the modern comics. So Alan Moore actually took some of the Golden Age American Best Comics characters and pulled them into his more modern American Best Comics as an imprint of Wildstorm. So for those who are listening, yeah, imprints are basically subtitles that many publishers release comics under. So not only was Wildstorm an imprint of DC, but America's Best Comics was an imprint of Wildstorm itself. So it gets a little convoluted, but they can be published under many different titles within a company or structure. So and now that I've – yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Josh. Just to add to that, no. for our listeners, if you pick up a DC comic, you know it's all in the shared universe. So the reason to have a bunch of different imprints is so that way what you're doing in one universe might not affect other books for your main series. Like DC Comics has their Vertigo series, which sometimes is part of the DC universe and sometimes isn't. So with America's Best Comics, for example, it wouldn't affect whatever Alan Moore decided to do with his universe, wouldn't affect the other universes in the Wildstorm category.
Absolutely. That's the most common reason for an imprint is the separation of storyline and character. Sometimes they overlap, but sometimes imprints are also for budgetary and business readings. They're like subdivisions. So you can let a imprint run out of money, per se, if it does not succeed. So, but the most common reason is continuity. But I'm going to talk about Top 10, which is a creation of Alan Moore in the latest imprint of America's Best Comics under Wildstorm. And I call it the Hill Street Blues of the comic world. And so Top 10 takes place inside of a megalopolis where most people have a superpower ranging from the wussified power to cook hot dogs with your heat vision, all the way up until Superman and Flash level powers. And Top 10 focuses on the 10th district of the police force in said city, and it has a huge cast and crew of very strange and enjoyable characters that have a variety of misadventures as they go and stumble through this world. One of my favorite parts of the entire series is actually combing through just panel after panel of background work to see all the advertisements that Alan Moore conceals into the background. Like there's on the subway, there's a poster of the Flash trying to sell sneakers. There's all kinds of these hidden little gems that Alan Moore crafts into the entire world. The character list itself is amazing and varied. Anywhere from I'm gonna forget his name, the sergeant. What's the sergeant's name, Mike? Give me his name.
Spax?
No. The Doberman.
I was gonna say the dog.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
So one of my favorite characters is the sergeant of the precinct, and everyone thinks he is a biomechanical Doberman, but really he's just a very intelligent Doberman in a mechanical suit. And he has a extraordinarily hilarious subplot where he falls in love with a local prostitute, and it is one of my favorite subplots, and some of the dialogue in and around his actions and relationships to conceal it from people in the precinct is one of the most hilarious things in all of comicdom. But the the overall, it's a pretty limited series. You could probably, I mean, if you compile every sub-comic and comic altogether, I can't say, I don't think there's more than 30 issues in total in the world for covering top 10, but I enjoy them all, and it's just the best satirical work Alan Moore has done.
His name is Sergeant Kelmo Hyperdog Caesar.
Hyperdog, yeah. Everyone calls him Hyperdog, but yeah. Yeah, he is one of my favorites. Him and Peacock. What's Peacock's name?
Detective John King Peacock?
Corbu? Yeah, King Peacock. So King Peacock, he follows an ancient Judeo-Christian religion that basically worships a demiurge instead of God, and they all think he's a Satanist. But I love him. He's a great character. He's very much like Karnak. He's, you know, off the charts martial arts, and then he pretends – well, he doesn't pretend. He believes that he gets transmissions from the demiurge telling him what people's weaknesses are. So he always knows where and just how to strike and defeat certain enemies. So if it's within his power, even though he's really just like peak human sort of framework, he finds ways to overcome people of much higher power than him. And I love that.
All right. Well, you got to mention my favorite character, Irmageddon. Officer Irma Warnow, also known as Irmageddon, a middle-aged woman in a nuclear-powered battle suit who often wants to just destroy everything. I loved Irmageddon.
I loved Irmageddon. I also love Jeff Smacks is kind of like a he's kind of like Wonder Man. He gets a lot of extra time at the end of the comic series, and then eventually he actually had his own miniseries, like an 8-issue miniseries, which was also fantastic. But all the offshoots, all the characters, the writing, especially the detail in the background in the series just makes it a very lengthy read when you take your time. It's very slow page turning for me, and it's one of the best satirical, humorous, and action comics I've ever read. I enjoy it immensely.
I agree with you
wholeheartedly. And I actually haven't read Top 10 yet, but it sounds kind of like Transmetropolitan in that it sounds like you really have to pay attention to a lot of what's in the background because half the story is there.
Or at least absolutely, and Alan Moore's just loves the dialogue. He loves the background stuff, and he likes making, you know, just everything interwoven, so you pull a thread and you can just see where it moves every character in the series. And it's just, you know, it's just like Hill Street Blues. Everyone's tied up and, you know, solving what needs to be done, and the characters are brusque and lovable, and it's just it's a fantastic series.
And I agree with you about the background, because one of my favorite things to do is after reading one of the comics was to go back and then slowly comb over every panel to look for not only those advertisements, but just characters from all over the comic bookdom that would just pop up, not just comic books, but pop culture, too, like the guys from Battlestar Galactica. Apollo and Starbuck from the old Battlestar Galactica are in like one of the backgrounds.
Yeah, it's a total slow read. Once you go back, it's definitely a double read every time. Like, you know, you missed something in there, and it's great to just go through and see everything. It's art on the wall for me.
Yeah, I enjoy it as much as I enjoy reading like Gru the Wanderer, stuff like that. Because you know, you read it once real quick, but then you got to look at all the things over and over again to catch all the things you might have missed.
Oh yeah, Gru's like a Where's Waldo.
This isn't so much.
It's busy work, and there's just so much going on, and it's like you just want to get in there like with an erasable pen and do like the old the Highlights magazine and do like everything you could see in there. Like, I just want to circle stuff and grow every time I read it.
That? Do you guys remember Girl One, Officer Sung Lee? She was always naked, except she also had camouflage, so it kind of looked like she was wearing clothes all the time.
Yep.
Now, there are three other dog officers, and they don't see color. So she got really mad when she finally figured that out. That was one of the funniest comic books I've ever read in my life.
Yeah.
Because two of the dogs were like, hey, we don't even like humans. What do you care? And one of the dogs was like, I thought you knew.
Except you're doing for Kemlo, because he loves people, yeah.
Yeah, Kemlo was like, I thought you knew, and also I thought you were doing it for my benefit. So, yeah, that was one of the funnier things for me. I could do a whole episode. We should sometime do a whole episode on Top 10 because there are so many characters and it's so good. But there are other good stuff in Wildstorm. And one of my favorites was I was going to talk about Tom Strong and Tom Strange. But then I realized that's not my favorite Wildstorm. I loved Danger Girl. Am I the only one?
I haven't read there.
Boobs.
I love boobs. I love things. But here's the twist. It's still not my favorite.
I believe I
guess what my favorite Wildstorm is. If Dave, all right, Tom, you done? All right, that still isn't my favorite Wildstorm. Guess what my favorite Wildstorm is now that I've looked through the whole list?
The Max. The whole list.
The Max is good, too.
The Max is amazing. But
yeah. But you know my taste. My tastes are kind of stupid. I loved Claw the Unconquered. Claw the Unconquered. You guys remember Claw the Unconquered?
No.
It was a total ripoff of Conan, but I loved Conan. And I had a huge stack of Claw the Unconquered. It was a Wildstorm. I didn't know Wildstorm even did it until I started doing research earlier this afternoon on Tom Strong. And I'm like, oh, Claw the Unconquered. And then I started looking through my own collection. I still have a bunch. They're stupidly great. So for my Wildstorm, I got to say it's Claw the Unconquered. All you got to do is take any Conan comic book, put an iron gauntlet on the guy, and boom, you got Claw the Unconquered. Because it's nothing but a ripoff. But I loved it. And I still love it.
Alright.
Yeah, there's no... And I realize after reading it, it's stupid. But it's one of those stupid things I really like.
To each his own.
Yeah. I understand why I love stupid things. I do love Danger Girl for the same exact reason. It's stupid. And they put every stereotypical woman character in there that they can. The femme fatale, the good girl, computer nerd, the girl next door, the Russian super sexy girl, all are right there for you and in stupid in-your-faceness, which is probably why I like Danger Girl too. But some of the Wildstorm ones really did go down to the lowest common denominator, and once you break down that common denominator, it's me. Sorry.
That's fair.
Are you sure that Claw the Unconquered was Wildstorm?
I am fairly certain. I mean, I'm looking at the list right now of all the different things that Wildstorm did, and that was one of them.
Tom is changing the Wikipedia page right now to fit
right as I speak
to fit his own narrative. But here's the real question: Wildstorm was really spun off all Jim Lee's work, and did anyone actually like Wildcats?
No,
I read Wildcats, yeah. But I'm not going to say
I read a lot of comics. But did anybody actually like it? I mean, it was almost. It was pretty close to a complete rip of X-Men. I mean,
I thought it was pretty close to a complete rip of a combination of X-Men and Avengers. Because the Avengers kind of worked more with authority, which Wildcats kind of seemed to imply.
Yeah, they were a covert team, and they were directed by the government, but that's really, I don't know.
So it seemed to me like blatant ripoff of pretty much all Team Marvel.
Yeah. I did like his character design. I mean, I like Jim Lee's art. I really enjoyed the visual styling of everyone. But, I mean, as everything past that, it was a pretty hollow comic for me.
And the cartoon wasn't that great.
I can't believe there was even a cartoon. I've always find that hard to believe.
What's that? I never saw the cartoon. Was it any good at all?
No, it was awful. It was
yeah,
Yeah.
I believe that was the Germany years for me.
I'm not sure when. Yeah, I'm not sure when that was on air.
But... You were back in the U.S.
You think so?
That was in my army days.
That was in, if it was in your army days, it was probably in my army days. So. Oh, maybe it Hawaii couldn't afford a TV. Yeah. I lived in a tent on the side of a mountain. I didn't have a TV. Sorry.
Well, my favorite of the Wildstorm imprint is Planetary, also by Warren Ellis. If you are a fan of comic books, this is a love letter to comic books. It follows a team of three investigators who, every issue, are going to look for or solve some problem for the government. But they always end up investigating a archetype that is definitely, you can definitely tell is something from our past, like Godzilla or John Constantine or the Swamp Thing or Wonder Woman and Superman. Every issue centers around them solving this kind of mystery. You would really like Planetary, Tom, because one of the things they do is a whole Doc Savage
homage. Yeah, they do Doc Savage homage pretty well.
Yeah, and I thought issue number 5.
And I thought having an actual Monster Island was also kind of brilliant.
Yeah, there's not a lot of issues to it. There's only 27 issues. You can pick them up pretty cheap on Comixology, like $2 each. It's really great. If you're a fan of comic books, you are going to really like Planetary.
Well, I will look over Planetary. It sounds like it's right up my alley. Anyone else have anything? Any other runners up they'd like to talk about? I already mentioned how much I like Danger Girl, so.
I mean, I liked League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, don't get me wrong. I didn't think it was the greatest thing ever. I did like the... I think Alan Moore really kicked off a genre there where you take literary characters all within a certain time period and sort of amalgamate them into a team. It's been done after that, you know. I think Penny Dreadful on Showtime.
It's very
Showtime,
popular now.
It's become fairly popular, and... I think he was really the match that lit the fuse on that sort of genre, which I think is amazing.
Mike, did you have a runner-up you wanted to jump in with, or do you want to go on to the next section?
You know, there are just so many comics that I had already mentioned that I really love, so we could just go on to the next section, because that would take spend all day talking about these comics.
We could just spend all day talking about comics.
And we've already talked a little bit about Astro City on our comic podcast in the past. So, I mean, some of these we've already mentioned.
An excellent point. Then let's just go straight to the front of the long box. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box for me?
At the front of the long box, I have Global Frequency, a Wildstorm comic by Warren Ellis. If you like action adventure and kind of like a sci-fi, X-Files kind of vibe, Global Frequency is the way to go. It is a independent organization of 1,001 experts in all different fields who are called upon by governments to help them when things just go crazy. To give you an idea, it's told like a television show. So each issue is its own story onto itself, and it has very few reoccurring characters. But it's a really great series. The second you pick up one of the Global Frequencies and turn the page and start reading it from that first panel, you're dropped right into the action, and it continues all the way through the end of the comic. Just to give you an example, the first issue, you find out that a guy, a Russian KGB sleeper agent, is having problems controlling a chip in his brain, which is going to open up a wormhole to an atomic bomb that's ready to go off in Russia. And the Global Frequency, they're not superheroes, they're just regular people who are experts in their field, have to figure out a way to stop that from happening. Have any of you guys read Global Frequency?
I have not.
Neither have I, and it sounds terrific. I don't know how this one snuck under my radar.
Yeah, there's only 12 issues of it, It won a couple Eisner Awards for best ongoing series. Like a lot of Warren Ellis comics, it just took forever for an issue to come out. So it's really easy to read it in the collected trade edition. That's how I'd recommend it for people.
Well, we do like to go to that trade edition. Speaking of editions, Tommy, what's at the back of the long box?
Funny that you mentioned the back of the long box. I have chosen Midnighter, another Wildstorm product. The one that I liked the best was the Garth Ennis run from Midnighter 2006-2008 series. The Garth Ennis stories I thought were really good. I've always loved Garth Ennis comic books in general, and this was no exception. Midnighter has been compared by many to Batman, but really he's kind of the anti-Batman. He works mostly at night, but unlike Batman, he unabashedly doesn't mind killing people at random. You know, when he gets into a fight, he is enhanced so that his brain will automatically run him through 1,000 simulations of how that fight's going to end. And so he pretty much knows what's going to happen in a fight based on just the first couple of moves, and totally obliterates his enemies, usually in new and inventive ways, because Midnighter likes to keep changing it up and making it fun for himself. So he tries to, you know, always do something a little different, regardless of the fight. And it's a great little series where, you know, he's trying to kind of get back in touch with the human race and working on a lot more stuff down on Earth and just by himself type things. And it was just a great series that I recommend to everybody. And it once again, you know, it covers a lot of his, you know, gay relationships and such, being progressive.
Well, speaking of progressive, I was going to talk a little bit about social justice issues in comic books, and I was also going to talk about Midnighter and Apollo as two of the better representations of a gay couple in comic books. Their relationship is long, storied, and varied, and it's three-dimensional. Sometimes they argue a little bit. Sometimes they fight. Sometimes they're, you know, lovey-dovey, and they do public displays of affection, which a lot of gay couples in comic books refrain from doing. But the writers and artists seem to, you know, allow this moments of tenderness to come through for audiences to watch. Of all the many, many couples now appearing in comic books that are same-sex, I think Midnighter and Apollo are one of my favorites, just because they really do try to make them as human as possible. And that's my little social justice blurb.
Didn't they have a kid?
They also have the child. The child is – I don't – that one's kind of an odd – adoption, only because it's a grown woman that they've adopted, even though the grown woman is now a baby.
Yeah, I've tried adopting grown women before. It just never really works out.
Yeah, a couple times for me too, and it always stinks.
Yeah. Some of them just don't want to be adopted.
I've even pretended to be gay with Josh to do it, and it still hasn't worked.
Yeah. I mean, it's just throw pretended up in quotes, my friend.
But and also here. In the...
their quotes.
In the 2015-2016 run of the Midnighter, I didn't care for the storyline quite as much, and it kind of implied that Apollo and Midnighter have either opened up their relationship or that they're no longer together.
Yeah, they were no longer together. They just reunited in their new series, Apollo and Midnighter, that just came out a couple months ago.
Yeah, the Rebirth issue. Yeah.
So
well, it's not actually even under Rebirth.
I was going to say, in the 15 to 16, there's a little bit of Midnighter play in the crowd.
Mike, I thought that was under Rebirth. That's not under the Rebirth line?
It's part of DC continuity, but it's not a Rebirth comic.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw it with Rebirth actually on the cover, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong. I've been known to be wrong.
And I've been known to out you for that, but I don't think you're wrong on this one.
Okay.
Once again, you could be.
Yeah, I'll try to find an image of the cover, but I thought it was actually a part of the Rebirth series, but I don't know. Now I am doubtful. Carry on.
You seem like you want to go off somewhere, maybe on a tangent, so I'm going to let you do exactly that. Josh, why don't you take us on a tangent?
So we were talking about lots of many things, and on my mind tonight was I've been waiting for a backlog Christmas present for my niece, and she has just started trying to write horror stories, and so I actually got her the first three volumes of Lock and Key for Christmas.
Good uncle.
But I also
good choice.
I am a good uncle, and I also, which is what I'm waiting for on back order, is the complete works of H.P. Lovecraft. So my question for my little side thing is favorite horror author and or horror book novel. What do you got? For me, it's on back order. It is called The Complete Works of H.P. Lovecraft. I love Lovecraft. But carry on. Go.
So if we were talking comic books or even just
books? No, we're not talking comics. No, we're talking...
Lock and Key made me stop reading it.
No, I'm thinking novelists here. So either your favorite horror author or your favorite horror novel. Since this is a comic tangent. Or tangential.
Joe Hill, who also wrote Lock and Key, wrote The Heart-Shaped Box, which is also a horror comic, and not a comic book, it's a horror novel. So I will go with that. The idea about it is really good. The premise is there's a rock star who's like this, you know, supposedly like Ozzy Osbourne kind of guy. He's the death metal kind of guy. And he buys a suit online that is supposedly haunted. And it turns out the suit is haunted and that ghost is trying to kill him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is kind of awesome. I would say, you know, Edgar Allan Poe.
What's your favorite Edgar Allan Poe story?
You know, The Cask of Amontillado is a little horror for the person being buried.
Well, Poe, yeah. I mean, The Telltale Heart.
Heart, I mean.
It's fantastic, yeah. I tried to go to the Edgar Allan Poe Museum in Philadelphia, but apparently it's closed on Mondays in case anybody's trying. And if you're going to go there, stay low and move fast. It's not a nice neighborhood.
Stay low and move fast. That is the name of my Kiss, mini Kiss cover band. Yeah.
Nice. I didn't even know Jews could sing like that.
It's true. I'm going to go with a very obvious one. I do really like Stephen King. I've read a lot of Stephen King books. Tommyknockers might be one of my favorites. It's not one of his better known works, but the Tommyknockers kind of scared the bejesus out of me.
I mean, I like Stephen King. Don't get me wrong. But really, I think he shines in short stories. And I think he shines in non-horror. I like Stephen King for the compilations, like, you know, basically what became the Shawshank Redemption, why can't I think of it now? The Gunslinger series, right? I really like his non-horror more than I've read Christine, I read Salem's Lot, and none of those things, they were fine. Really what I tend towards for him is his non-horror, which is, I think, is what he's not known for.
I agree with you, Tom. The Stand is one of my favorite books of all time. And as far as horror goes, it is very, very scary up until the last, like, the 200 last... pages where he just gave up. Like,
yeah. Spoilers. God, I cannot stand the end of that book. Yeah. That is brain murder at the end. You're like, oh, my God, this book is so scary. Really? Really? What you came up with at the end? Like, you just really, yeah. It's like he just gave up and, like, handed it to, like, some, like, ninth grader at a high school kind of close to where he lives and walked away. Because it's awful. The end is awful.
The second author was like, clowns aren't scary. Spiders are scary.
Oh, super scary.
Scary.
Yeah.
Ooh, big spider.
Oh.
Cobwebs everywhere.
I read the first couple hundred pages of that book while I was doing an advanced scout maneuver with the military. And I was about 200 yards in a little tent doing these maneuvers. Being an advanced scout. So I'm sitting in a tent in the cold in Germany reading this book, scared out of my mind with a loaded gun. Not the best time of my life.
Shooting at spiders in your tent.
I read it after Hurricane Andrew, where we had gotten sent down for Hurricane Andrew relief when I was in the Army. So we were in a tent city. And then in order to shower, I had to walk across the street to a deserted high school that had no power or anything, so we had to bring our flashlights to walk around this deserted high school to find the gym to go take a shower. That freaked me out a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and afterwards you loan that book to everyone you know and then dress up as a clown for the rest of that deployment. Awesome.
And that's how you never make sergeant.
And that's how you shower alone.
Wait, what?
Wait a minute. You should always shower. What are you talking about? In the military?
In the military? Wait a minute.
We're not talking about Bible camp here. We're talking about the military.
Those are recent regulation changes.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Now it's don't ask, don't tell. Before it was, hey, don't do that.
Yeah. Don't ask, don't wear clown costumes. That was pretty much the rule.
You've been in the military if you've actually pooped next to a guy, like, and your legs are touching.
And your legs are touching, yeah. I remember that in the middle of nowhere, there was like 100 toilets about a foot apart.
Yeah.
With no walls between them. And I'm like, how does that even work? And then someone screaming, you know how it works, do it!
All right. Yeah.
No, I'm not shy or anything.
It's all right. Bearing down on someone else's knee? Necessary.
Yeah. Everybody, 1, 2, 3, push! All the knees flexing together.
Yeah.
That's an awful image.
Yeah.
But accurate. That was a tangent. Good job, dear Josh.
Thanks.
We took that to some pretty bad depths.
Carry on, my wayward son.
All right, well, I guess we'll talk about plugs.
Pensacon! What, seriously? Nobody's going to be back out of this?
Now we're just going to let you sit there like that. Pensacon is coming up. That's coming up in February. We're going to go down for that one. And we're all looking forward to it. Yeah, we're not really sure what we're going to be doing at that one, but we're sure we'll be doing a bunch of stuff because that's a great, great con to go to.
Absolutely. Pensacon is in Pensacola, Florida from February 17th to the 19th.
All right. And Josh, you got anything to plug?
Just friendlycomics.com, my local neighborhood comic shop. Go there, buy some comics, and that place is nice and clean.
And how about you, Mikey?
Well, we'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can go check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com to hear more of their stuff or just go on iTunes and buy their stuff. They are a great geek rock band. I think I should also plug Penguins versus Possums. Issue number 8 just came out today. So if you haven't been reading that, if you like the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you should really pick up that series.
I would like to plug Vantage In-House Productions. Victor Dandris does a wonderful job making comics and other media for all ages. And everybody should check out Vantage In-House Productions. And also, they should check out our good friends at IanLeno.com.
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 Purveyors are fine, fine geekware. And also other geeky things like stained glass prints, glasses, stickers, posters. You name it. Ian is a fantastic artist and has made so many great geeky mashup things. So check out their site.
And he'll be at Pensacon.
Because Valentine's Day is just around the corner.
All right, but you can't just say Victor Dandris. You have to say his full name, which is the Dreamy Victor Dandris. Victor Dandris, he has his name in the book leading multiple panels coming up here. And every single time, for some reason, they put the Dreamy Victor Dandris down. I'm not sure if that's in his writer. He is dreamy. I mean, I love the man.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, the Dreamy Victor
Dandris. I'm dreaming of him right now. Because Lunesta is really starting to kick in.
Well, before it kicks all the way in, let me do my quickie little blurb. And that is I would like to plug our Twitter page, which is outside the long box, at the long box, guys. And also want to post, just say a quick shout out to our man, Orny Loki. Orny Loki, a Dorchester native, and he got his big break. He's in the WWE now. If you see him at a show, give him a big old how you doing from Dorchester. And it's great to see a local boy out there kicking some butt. And he looks like he's from Dorchester. Anyone who knows Dorchester, Mass. Knows what someone from Dorchester, Mass. Looks like. And he's wearing it.
Who's the most famous wrestler from Dorchester?
From Dorchester? The Duke of Dorchester?
Pete Doherty, that's right.
Pete Doherty, the Duke of Dorchester. Wow, I haven't thought about Pete Doherty in a dog's age. I hope he's still around. All right, go to bed there, LT. And from everybody here at Thinking Outside the Long Box, we hope everyone has a great coming up year. 2017 going to be the most kick-ass year ever. It's going to be a great year for punk rock music and for movies and plays. because repression always breeds good music, good plays. And Mikey, what is this podcast to you?
A drain on my bank account.
Excellent. And earlier today, this guy was here. He wanted to know whose sector was this. Tommy, is it yours?
No, man.
Shut up, Tommy.
Josh,
is it yours?
This is not my sector, but you know what? Pensacon might be my sector, and I'm going to patrol the hell out of it.
Let's patrol the hell out of Pensacon. Don't spend time and energy dissing what you hate. Just promote what you love, and everyone have a great night.
Woo! It's party time. And ladies tonight, and by party time I mean his stories from 1939. She makes jam in the AM, she makes ham in a cataract Ray-Bans. She know me ever since I used to use crayons. My mama is a baby that she made. It's party time, and my ladies tonight, and by party time I mean go to bed at 8 o'clock at night. She got moves like what? She can't hear, so she always says what? When I was little, she would spank me on my butt and wash my mouth with soap. At 80.